Jen and Drina here with Finding Your Five.
This podcast is based off the concept that you are the average of the five people you hang out with most. So you want to elevate your life? Surround yourself with good people. And the individuals we are interviewing, anyone would be lucky to have in their group of five. Hey, Fivers.
Hey, everyone.
I want to give a shout out to all our listeners.
You know who you are.
You know who you are, you guys. And we are so excited to have you with us. France, love having you here with us. Would love to hear your take on some things. Give us a shout if you feel like it.
Japan.
Malaysia.
Mexico.
Germany. Australia. United Kingdom. Thanks for the download, Prince William.
Royalty loves us.
I want you right now to imagine that it's somebody's who's very important, their birthday today. And Drina, it's her birthday today.
Happy birthday to me.
Listen to the pipes on her. Is that what we say in the music industry?
She's got pipes. She's got organs. No, that doesn't work. She's got...
She's got it all, guys. And she is in her prime of life.
That's all we're going to say about it. Right, Jen?
Yeah.
Thank
you. I so badly want to say the age.
Also, Jenny and Giff are so nice. They brought me donuts. They know my love language. Thanks for those.
Love donuts.
They're great.
Which I need to stop having donuts because COVID-15, 20, 41 maybe. But we're not talking we're just talking about pounds, not age. So, Drina, what would be a great present for you from our listeners?
It would be great if I had 41 reviews. Wouldn't that be great?
Oh, that's an interesting number you picked.
41 likes. I mean, 21. 21 likes. 21 recommendations of who we should have on the podcast that are part of your five. So we can have them as a guest and learn more about them.
So reach out. Finding Your Five on Facebook or Instagram and give us some recommendations and think about how much that person's going to appreciate that you recommended them for our podcast. Mm-hmm. It's like the gift that keeps giving, if you will.
Correct.
So share, like, subscribe, all the things Finding Your Five. Those of you who are already subscribers, thank you so much for being here with us.
We feel your love. Thank you.
Feel your love.
Speaking of recommending someone from your five, our next guest was highly recommended. His name came up multiple times.
And we were just hoping that he would see the vision and come to our show.
And he did, because he's that kind of guy.
You guys are in for a treat with tons of great stories, with great lessons. And he is just like a ball of energy.
His name's Nathan Osmond. He's a podcaster, singer-songwriter, motivational speaker. He has a production company called Entune Productions. Just a great guy.
Yeah, his podcast is called Achieving Awesomeness Now. It is definitely, like, if you are feeling kind of melancholy, I would say check it out because it definitely is uplifting.
It's going to fire you up. Fire you up with awesomeness.
And he himself is just a story machine of just such great things. Yeah. One of his stories, I'd be like, wow, that's amazing. But he has multiple of these kinds of, like, just amazing, crazy stories.
He does. And they're stories about the people that he has in his five. And you can tell that they have definitely rubbed off on him because he keeps the stories coming, even in his personal singer-songwriter adventures.
Mm-hmm. Like, share, subscribe, Finding Your Five, you guys. And we will take it to this episode.
Nathan Osmond, we appreciate you coming, talking about all these wonderful things that you do. The thing that is hard is trying to pinpoint what to talk to you about because you do everything.
Music's kind of been my go-to, right, in production, called Entune Productions. I do a lot of motivational speaking, a lot of life coaching. I got a podcast, you know,
exactly.
So I do that. I got a lot of side hustles, which I could tell you about. But I guess it's just trying to figure out what I want to be when I grow up, you know? Why not test a lot of different things?
Yeah, you're having fun along the way, we can tell.
But you must have some hacks on like how you do time management because you really do have your hand in so many things.
I just don't sleep a lot. I do spend a lot of time in my office. And I was talking to a young man. I asked him one time, how do you know that you are doing what you're born to do? And he just said, if you need an alarm clock to get up in the morning, there's your sign. He said, I don't sleep that much. I have so much passion for what I do. I'm up and at them without ever having to have an alarm clock set. I wish we didn't have to sleep. Wow. You know, and it's that work ethic. And I thought, that's inspiring. You know, when you have passion for something, you don't have to be coaxed to go and do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I find joy in a lot of different things. And I love the creativity side of things. And it goes back to my days watching my dad, you know, who was my exemplar. He produced the Donnie Marie shows. You know, and so I was always around studios and always around production and TV and artists. And so it just looks so exciting to me. I used to tour on the tour buses with him and the rest of the Osmonds. And I remember one time I didn't want to come home. I was having so much fun with my dad. Uncle Donnie had to come get us from this guy who was going to take us to the airport. So we jumped on his tour bus and we were going to catch up to the rest of the brothers. And we got to go hang out at the mall with Uncle Donnie,
oh,
who
nice.
Took me to see Return of the Jedi when
oh,
it was
nice.
In theaters. Yeah, it was so much fun. I caught the bug. I was like, I want to do this the rest of my life. So we decided this. We didn't know any different. We just thought everybody has a TV studio and mm-hmm. a dad is a cartoon character.
This is normal.
We thought it looked so appealing and so exciting. So we started singing two-part harmony on our own. We just kind of had that natural gift of hearing it and singing it. My father's like, who taught him that? And he got excited because he was the one that taught all the Osmonds all their harmonies. So he created a quartet. And there was a local TV show called the Eugene Jelesnik Talent Showcase Show. And they found out about us and they said, let's give them the whole show. Well, this is pretty cool, right? Well, People Magazine wrote a little tiny article about this big about a new generation of Osmonds. And lo and behold, famous Bob Hope was sitting by his pool, opened up People Magazine and reads about this new generation of Osmonds. He said, ow. I want those boys on my show, right? So he calls us up, and Bob Hope, this is amazing. Yeah. So we really practiced, went in, did our first national TV show with him, and Curb Records found out about it. And they're the ones that, you know, had the Osmonds signed for all those years. They thought, well, another generation. We made them famous once. Let's do it again. And they signed us on Curb Records. So we had a lot of fun and success.
So as a kid, you were in a quartet with your brothers and then into a boy band, toured with New Kids on the Block. Then you decided to go solo and start a career singing country music. How did you get into the country music scene?
My cousin Travis, who's a real hick, you know, he had the F-150, you know, white pickup truck.
Yeah.
This is when we're in high school. He pulls me into his truck. He says, now, Nathan, you listen to this guy. His name's Garth.
Yeah.
And he popped in this cassette player, right? And Thunder Rolls came on.
Oh,
I was like, oh, wow, that's country?
Yeah.
You know, I was thinking it's going to be like Loretta Lynn or something else. And anyways, this was a new kind of country. And I said, this is cool.
So you made an awesome album. Tell us the story of when you heard one of your songs on the radio for the first time.
Yeah, I was in Hawaii. I was on my way to a rehearsal because I was producing. But I was driving and this one country station in Oahu starts playing, and it was the first time I ever heard my song come on without me calling to request it, right?
right.
Kicks in, I'm like, so it's coming right over right where Pearl Harbor is, and I was screaming. It was so exciting.
So you love country singing, very good at it, but you also are a producer.
Producing's fun. I just think it's fun to use your talents and your gifts to help the up-and-coming generation.
Yeah.
And hopefully now be kind of a more of a mentor for others. It's pretty cool.
Do you have someone that you've helped produce music for where you're like, they've got something, it's going somewhere?
I've heard the good, the bad, and the ugly. Uh-huh. And I think it's important that you encourage, but you have to be brutally honest. If you work hard enough and you apply yourself long enough, you can do it. Now, it's not going to be an easy road. You know, well, Beethoven was told that he was hopeless as a composer, and thank goodness he was deaf. Because he didn't hear that comment, right?
Yeah.
He just kept on producing. So anything is possible so long as you're willing to put in the blood, sweat, and tears. You know, Donnie, I was talking to him and also my Aunt Marie before I went out with my first album because I said, should I go out as Nathan Osmond? But then I talked to Donnie and he said, Nathan, people go on shows like, you know, American Idol or America's Got Talent because they want to be part of what's called a brand. They want to be part mm-hmm. of something that people recognize, right? It gives them some street cred right off the bat. It says, you've got street cred. You've got a brand. It's called Osmond. Now, don't abuse it. Don't camp on it. Let it get a foot in the door, but then you've got to have the goods because they're going to judge you based on your talent and your music and your looks, and this is a fickle business. You've got to have some thick skin. Not everybody is going to like you, and you have to be okay with that, mm-hmm. which is the hardest thing to do as an artist. Your job is to make everybody like you. Yeah. So it's nice to have that kind of advice, you know, from family members that have been in this business mm-hmm. and were able to kind of really give me some sound advice. It's up to you, really. That's why, you know, with my podcast, I talk about awesomeness. What does it mean? Because you determine, you define what that word means. And but I just tell them, do it for all the right reasons. Do it because you love it.
When you're saying you're doing more episodes, I was listening to the one, It's Who You Become That Ultimately Matters.
Did you like that one?
Yeah. And I couldn't believe the whole coming back each time. Now do this and teach yourself this. Like when you talk about putting your mindset and like learning to skate and all this. I mean, it just seems unreal. I mean, I don't want to take away from your episode.
No,
but do you want to share
a
little bit?
They'll go learn and listen to it. But my father taught me you can do it. You can do it. Because he was always told he could do it. He had no choice but to do it.
Yeah.
And so at the age of 12, they go down pursuing this dream in Los Angeles to be on anybody's show, to get discovered. So how do you go get discovered? Well, you go find out where the stars live. So they bought a map of where the stars live. You get arrested doing this today. And they just went up to their door, Grandpa George, boom, boom, boom. Hi, these are my sons, the Osmond brothers. You know, they want to sing you a song. They went to this one house where the Lennon sisters lived, and they were on the Lawrence Welk show. And they're about the same age, but all girls. And so they were excited to get to meet these young boys from Utah. And they said, well, sing us a song. And they did. And back and forth, they sang, wow, you guys are really good. Why don't we see if we can get you to come and meet Mr. Lawrence Welk while you're here in town? Mm. You know, really didn't have an appointment, but they tried to see if they could work their magic. They went down there. They're all dressed up for an audition they hoped would happen. And for whatever reason, he's in the other room. He won't even come out and shake their hands or acknowledge their presence. And it was just devastating to this my father, who was the oldest of the group, who was 12. Grandma, seeing these boys just heartbroken, said, you know, George, let's take him to Disneyland and you know, then we'll go home and live normal lives. Mm-hmm. And that was going to be it. That was like their big try. Well, you dress the part, things can happen. Because they went straight from their audition to Disneyland, and they were dressed looking like a quartet. Lo and behold, the Dapper Dans, that quartet that rides the bicycles down Main Street, USA, sees these boys. And they say, boy, you guys look like a quartet. And he says, well, we are. Well, sing us a song. Okay. And right there on Main Street, USA, the Osmond Brothers performed publicly for one of the first times ever, right? They'd sung in church and other stuff. But the Dapper Dans start singing back and forth. Everyone thinks it's part of the attraction. So they said, you got to meet our boss. And they actually got hired by Disney to come and perform. And they did all these things, right? They got to even perform for Mr. Walt Disney himself, wow. which was so cool. So, but then he said, you got to meet our boss, who happened to be Andy Williams' father. And, you know, and it was because of the Lennons. They had him performing in like, boxing fights and stuff at half times and things. But it was Andy who said, okay, let's put these boys on the show. My father said I should give him a shot, so he listened to his dad, and they nailed it. They just practiced their little hearts out, and they got such an overwhelming response. Everybody says, we got to have those Osmond brothers back on. So he called them back. He says, okay, can you guys, we want to keep it fresh and new. Can you guys play like saxophone? Well, their mother was a saxophone player, so she taught them all the parts. They came in, and they nailed it. First take. Wow.
How much time did they have? Sorry.
They had a week.
That's what I thought.
They had one week to prepare for this, and if you didn't have something new, you were off the show.
Yeah.
They started getting this nickname, the One Take Osmonds, because that's really all you had back in the day. And then they just every week, it's like, can you guys tap dance? You bet they can, Grandpa say, right? And they're like, oh my gosh. And then the one day came and they said, can you guys ice skate? And they look at Grandpa like, don't you dare. Like, you bet they can, right? Oh my gosh. And so they went to the local ice skating rink. They rented skates. They learned all the tricks. They wanted it so badly that they were willing to put in whatever time it took. They come in and they nailed it. And they were so good that the Ice Capades called that week and said, we saw you on the Andy Williams shows. You guys are really good. Would you like to go on the road? And my father just said, I learned I could do more than I thought I could. If you just set your mind to it. He learned that in the military too. He said, I thought I was going to die. But I learned I could do more physically than I ever gave myself credit for. So they even wrote a song on the Plan album. You can do it, yeah, right? And I never thought about that, but that was a family slogan. You can do it, right? They didn't know they could ice skate a week before. It's incredible. So with that example, I credit my father and my mother for that belief. And so sometimes I also tell people that you've got to believe sometimes in other people's belief in you until your own belief kicks in. So surround yourself with those that build you up, not tear you down.
Yeah. Do you feel like there's something psychological about the whole idea that they're locked in versus just being like, I'm going to try to develop this talent? It's like, okay, we kind of like took that leap first. Like, yes, we're committing. Okay, now we're scrambling to figure it out. I mean, is that
if you could see, we're all trying to figure it out. Anyone that comes off sounding confident is scrambling to figure stuff out. And it's sometimes you fake it till you make it. But the thing is that, I mean, they were willing to put in the time. Mm-hmm. I think the more that they accomplished, the more they knew they could accomplish.
Yeah.
That we did that. Now what else can we do? The time came when they were asked to produce this show called The Donnie and Marie Show. But they were taking more of a producer's role because Donnie and Marie were kind of taking the front. And so my father applied himself and he said, well, let me see what I can do as a producer. I was around, you know, all these great choreographers and cinematographers and directors all these years. What did I learn from them? And he got the best training from the best people in the business. Yeah. The Donnie and Marie Show ended up being on the Guinness Book of World Records for the most watched variety show produced by my dad. I think you got to have passion for whatever it is that you do and do it for the right reasons. You know, Donnie taught me about singing, you know. He came out to Missouri, and I was trying to sing this song called You're Not Alone. And I was really excited to sing it for him. You know, I don't get to sing for Donny Osmond. And I look up to him, not only as an uncle, but as an artist. So I said, Donnie, would you come listen to my song and maybe pick it apart a little bit? He's brutally honest. So I sit down, and I do the nice intro, and I go, here's a little song. He goes, cut.
Oh, no.
What did I get myself into? You get what you ask for.
Never mind,
I was like,
never mind.
He says, I didn't believe a single word you just sang. And I was like, ow, inside. Yeah. But I was like, grateful for this. But here I am sitting next to Donnie Osmond on the piano bench. He goes, I didn't believe a word you just sang. Like, mean everything you say when you sing. And he worked with me. And that night, he says, you did it. You nailed it.
Nice.
And what a great coach.
Yeah.
You know, I consider myself blessed to have such brutal coaches, but yet we're coming from a place of love. So I've relied on him as my safe person. He said, everybody needs a safe person. You talk about your five. Yeah, he's definitely one of them.
Yeah.
But I look at other people in my life. I look at, like, you know, you become who you hang around. I learned that from many mentors. Les Brown is one of the guys that I brought into the studio here in Utah. You know, here's a cancer survivor. Here's a guy that was born on the floor of an abandoned building in Liberty City, you know, Miami. And he taught me that. He says, Nathan, you know, when I was a kid, I had a twin brother, and we were given up at birth, you know, to this lady who adopted us, Mrs. Mamie Brown. And I remember being in school, and I was labeled DT, the dumb twin. And kids just made fun of me, and I felt stupid because everybody said I was. And one day my math teacher calls me up in front of the whole class and said, Leslie Brown, you come up here right now. And he was about peed his pants. He was so nervous, and all the kids start laughing. And he said, I want you to do this problem here on the board in front of the class. And they all start laughing. He's the DT. He's the dumb twin. And he says, Nathan, this man changed my life. Because he looked at me and he says, somebody's opinion of you doesn't have to become your reality. Woo. Mm. And that was the start. He says, Nathan, you got to believe in somebody else's belief in you until your own belief kicks in. He says, he looked at me with the eyes of Goethe, who said, treat a man the way that he is and he only becomes worse, but treat a man the way that he could be. And then he becomes what he should be.
I love how you said that when you talked to Donnie and he gave you that feedback with that song.
Yeah.
But it feels like when he gave you the feedback, it was also, you know, cushioned in love. Do you think that anyone can be that honest critic if they cushion in love, or does the responsibility also rely on the recipient because you were open to the critique? Like, you really wanted it.
It has to be received in the right way, too.
Yeah.
Because some people, it's so easy to get offended. Turn on the news.
Mm-hmm.
We are so offended. We need to stop being offended. We got to accept, you know, the feedback as that. It's someone's opinion. And at the end of the day, you can choose to take their advice or not.
Yeah.
But I was asking him to pick me apart. If you're hanging around negative people, you're going to be the sixth negative person, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was Jim Rohn who you named your whole show after, right?
Yeah.
That you become the average sum of the five people with whom you associate. And so don't hang around negative people. In fact, Donnie told me that. He says, don't hang around yes men. Oh, you're the best. You're the greatest. You could do nothing wrong. Baloney.
Mm-hmm.
You believe your own press releases that way. No. you got to hang around people that are going to be honest enough to tell you where you're strong and where you're weak. My father was that man to Donnie because he was too close to it. He was the front guy out there. My father was on the rhythm guitar going, Donnie, work this side of the stage. Right? He could see it from a different perspective than Donnie could. And so my Uncle Donnie respected my dad because he was his mentor. You know, so I got the best of both worlds.
Yeah, that's really neat.
It's really cool to have them both on my as my top five. But because not everybody's going to like me, and I have to be okay with that. Who do I learn that from? One of my five, right?
Yeah.
I've tried to surround myself with positive people, though. Mm-hmm. I found that you become, you know, what you think about most of the time. But then you got Rhonda Byrne, who writes The Secret, saying the same thing. You got Og Mandino, The Greatest Secret in the World. They always want to call it a secret, but one of my favorite books is, as a man thinketh, so is he, or so shall he be. And that book's been out a long time, right? So The Secret's been out for over 2,000 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I always ask people when I do motivational speaking, I say, so what are you thinking about? Because we become what we think about. So why don't you think about yourself succeeding in what it is that you do? When you ask yourself these questions, like Noah St. John, who was on my show, he wrote a whole book called Affirmations, right? And he had this idea in the shower that we become what we think about. And why, asking the right questions, why am I so successful? Why am I so driven? Why am I so, you know, why does everything I touch turn to gold? You start asking the right questions and watch what happens. I did a lot of big seminars, and I went up to Brian Tracy one time and I asked him, you know, I said, hey, can I use this quote from your 21 Secrets of Self-Made Millionaires? And he says, Nathan, you can use all my stuff and never give me credit for it. I'm like, what? He says, Ecclesiastes says there's nothing new under the sun. Where do you think we got it from? And the people that we got it from, where'd they get it from?
I like that response.
100 years from now, they'll be starving for this. So I learned a lot about, you know, goal setting from him. And I came up to him and said, Brian, here's my goals. Take a look at these. He said, those are awesome, Nathan. Those are great. But can I teach you a little something about goal setting? I'm like, I got the best mentors. I'm surrounded by greatness here. Teach me, Brian. And so he said, I want you to go take those same goals that you're carrying around in your wallet with you, and I want you to rewrite them as if you're already living those goals. Mm-hmm. See, those affirmations. Mm-hmm. Rather than I will do this or I will do that. No, I am this. I have this. I earn this. Mm-hmm. I read this many books. I weigh this. And here's why. And be descriptive. Now carry those same goals rewritten in the present, and I want you to come back to me in a year and show me how you did. And guess what? I was 250 plus pounds at the time. My cholesterol was just off the charts. My triglycerides were incalculable. You know, it was like I was a walking heart attack. And here I was, a young, young dad. Anyways, I started surrounding myself with all these people I was introducing, whether they're sports heroes or television people or war heroes. It was awesome. Just the people I was introducing, business leaders, the presidents of the United States. I was around all sorts of amazing people. And I introduced this one guy on stage at that time. His name was Larry Scott. And Larry Scott was Mr. Universe, Mr. California. He's the guy that inspired Arnold Schwarzenegger back in the day to get into the weightlifting business. Here I am talking to these guys because I got to introduce them. So I picked their brain on a few things.
Yeah.
And I said, here's where my levels are. I need to get my life in shape or I'll check out early. You're 66 years old. You got rock solid abs. Do you do a lot of sit-ups? He goes, I do no sit-ups. I said, whoa.
What?
He says, in fact, you know, I worked out my abs in the shower today. I said, I don't know if I want to know what you did in the shower today, but I'm a little curious.
Yeah.
And he talked about how heat helps to burn fat and how isometrics and isotonic. And he started teaching me about the 2-to-1 ratio. Eat 2 proteins for every carb workout. Make it fun, too, he said.
Yeah.
Change it. And I started getting coaching from the guy that inspired Arnold Schwarzenegger,
yeah.
Right? So I started doing a few things. Guess what? About 4 months later, I weighed exactly what I had written down. I dropped 50 pounds in 4 months.
Oh, my gosh.
I just started to like look like the guy I described on paper. I barely could read a book or two a year because I wasn't really into reading. I read 17 because I applied myself. I believed I was a reader.
Yeah.
You know, I started saying the person I wanted to be. So, you know, even on my podcast, I've talked about writing your own obituary. Go ahead and write it down. What do you want said at your big last party? Start writing it down and read it every single day. Because there was a guy who woke up one day and read the paper, and he read his own obituary because the newspaper guy messed up, the writer. His brother actually had died, but he thought it was this guy.
Oh, wow.
And so he was like, oh, my gosh, because as he started to read what people really thought about him. And this was the man that created dynamite. And so he was called the Merchant of Death Dies, right?
Oh, wow.
And he was like, oh, my gosh, this is what they think of me? you know, and just rip this guy apart for selling his creation to all these nations of the world so they could blow each other up. So he decided then and there that day, I'm going to do something to change my legacy, because that's not what I want said at my real funeral. And so the man took all this money he had created from the creation of dynamite and bombs, and he went and he created a trust fund and named it after himself. The man's name was Alfred Nobel. And so every year, you know, individuals or companies or things that, you know, are receiving $1 million for their efforts to generate peace around the world. Every time you hear about the Nobel Peace Prize, you don't think about dynamite and death. You think about peace. Isn't that interesting how we can change our legacy? But we should start today. It causes me to go dive into some of those books that I read and continue to read. It makes me want to learn more. And what else can I share with humanity that might inspire somebody or save someone's life or whatever it is, you know? But the thing is that, one of my favorite books says you have not because you ask not. And that's the big secret in life. Well, how can I get around people? How can I get like mentors like you have? Well, you just ask. Mm-hmm. Can I come in the recording studio and watch you work? And that's how I got into country music, because I was working at Stadium of Fire, which my dad started with Lone Star. And they're a big country band. Mm-hmm. I love their stuff. Mm-hmm. And I went up to Dean Sams during the fireworks show, the finale. I'm like, if you want to work with these guys, you better ask. And here's where I was just barely trying to get my foot in the door, even as just a writer in Nashville. And so I went up to Dean Sams because he was the keyboard player and I'm a keyboard player, so we had something in common. And I said, hey, is that your keyboard over there? Right? But it struck up a conversation. Yeah. I'm a keyboard player. I'm a songwriter. And Brian McKnight has produced some of my stuff. And I love your stuff, man. My dream is to get to write with you guys. You don't ever do a bad song. And so he's like, well, why don't you come out to Nashville sometime? We'll write. Like, are you serious? Is it that easy? So I thought, he's not going to call me. He found a little napkin, wrote his email on there, and so did Richie McDonald, the lead singer. I got two emails out of the four guys. I was like, yes. So I said, okay, create the opportunity, because you don't wait for your ship to come in. You swim out to meet it. That's what I learned from my father. So I said, okay, use strategy. They're going to be off the road probably around Christmas time. So book it around Christmas time. So I thought this right after the 4th of July. Okay, Dean, I'm coming out here. And I gave him the dates, you know. I'd love to take you up on your offer to write with you, you know. And so he says, oh, fantastic. I'm producing a duo at that time, but let me know when you're coming out, and I'll tell you what I can and can't do. I said, that'd be great. So I write to him, Dean, what's your phone number so I can reach you when I get out there? Nothing. I've already spent
too far.
The money.
Went too far.
I'm going out there. Anyways, the day before, I'm like, please, I don't want to be, you know, pushy, but I need to know how to reach you, and nothing. Like, I don't even know how to reach this guy. So I just started networking with everyone I could think of, and I called up all these musician friends. Do you have a number on Lone Star? No, sorry, I don't. I call up Joel Stevenette, this great drummer who played for Jody Messina. He's here in Utah now. He said, I think I got their tour manager's number. I said, great. So I call him up. I'm actually in the studio with Jason Deere, who's a great writer, a good friend of ours out there. And I said, I call up Coach and I said, hey, I'm out here. I'm supposed to be writing with Dean. I know that he's got this new studio. I try to pretend I knew the guy really well. He says, do you happen to have like a studio number on the guy? He says, all I have is his personal cell phone number. So now I'm calling Dean and I said, Dean, I'm out here. I said, I thought I gave you my number. He says, no, I got it from Coach. That was their tour manager. He goes, let me call you back in 10. He doesn't call me back in 10 or an hour or 4 hours goes by. I think, and now he's thinking, oh, great. Psycho Osmond kids in my backyard's got my cell phone number. See, all these negative thoughts start kicking in. Mm-hmm. But then I'm sitting there at the Cheesecake Factory just trying to like feed my feelings, right? And I said, stop it. You came out this way to Nashville to pursue a goal and pursue a dream. Whether Dean Sams calls you back or not, you go make the most of this trip. And I had to be my own motivator, right? So I kicked into gear. I found out about this place called Broadway. And I thought, well, all these honky-tonks are down there, I hear, all these great musicians. Go down there. And I got up there and I sang the best version of God Bless the USA I'd ever sung. And all of a sudden my phone goes off and it was Dean Sams. And he goes, Nathan, I'm an idiot. I just totally spaced it and forgot to call you back. What are you doing right now? I said, Dean, I'm in my car driving to your house. How the heck do I get there, right? He's like, I love it. I love your tenacity. That's what you got to have to make it in this business. Mm-hmm. I show up in the middle of the night there, and he's in there with this other songwriter. He's got this big, beautiful grand piano sitting there in his studio. And he says, all right, have a seat. Show me what you got. In other words, prove yourself. And I sat down, and I started playing some of the snippets of my best stuff. He's like, you wrote that? I said, yeah. He said, play another one. I started playing. Wow, play another one. Finally, he cut me off and he said, Nathan, three things. One, I hate you. And it was like this awkward silence. And he goes, because I'm a keyboard player and you make that look easy. Aww. Number two, what the heck are you doing in Utah? Get out here to Nashville. You got so much to offer this town and vice versa. And number three, guess who's coming to my house tomorrow at 9 o'clock to write? You are. I thought, wow, trying to keep my cool and not explode with tears. I'm like, ah. So I'm like, oh, thanks, dude. And he goes, I said, people don't care about what you want to do. They only care about what they want to do, right? We're all tuned into the same radio station, WIFM. What's in it for me? Right? So I said, Dean, you got a starter? We can work on one of your songs. And I grabbed my little recorder I had in my pocket, and I recorded the melody. I took it to my room, and I wrote the whole song, and I took it to him the next night. And I sat down on that same grand piano the next night. I said, Dean, what do you think of this? Not only did I sit down and I started playing his melody, but I had it all written. He says, you wrote that? I said, yeah, I just kind of threw it together. I spent the whole day on that silly song. He loved it. We tweaked it. We made it better. And then I had time to record it that night. I did the demo. I put my voice on it. And now I'd just written a song with Lone Star. I had the proof right there on my CD player, right? And it was a tearful moment. And I thought, wow. And then, long story short, he just keeps raving about this song. He says, this is an amazing song, dude. In fact, we want to record it. Lone Star tied up my first song I ever did, ever wrote in Nashville. And I thought, this is too good to be true. And it was, because about 2 days later, he writes me back. He says, you're not going to believe this. After 14 years as our lead singer, Richie McDonald just emailed all of us and said he wants to go solo. What? There goes my big chance. There goes my big song out the window. And then I said, turn lemons into lemonade. I said, Dean, if you're not going to do anything with that song, do you mind if I do? It's always been my dream to have my own country album. And he says, dude, why don't you just come to my house? We'll do it right. I said, you know, I'll take you up on that. And I did. And that's how I got my foot in the door in Nashville with Lone Star producing me. They even played on my stuff. They were just in town the other day and got to go hang out. Richie's since rejoined the band, you know, and they became my friends now. You become who you hang around.
I love it. I know you have to leave, but it feels like it'd be a missed opportunity if you didn't serenade us for a quick second before you go. Is that something that's allowed to ask? I'm just taking a page out of your book if you don't ask.
What do you want to hear?
We have guitars. We have a mandolin. Drum set. You decide.
You got a keyboard?
A keyboard. Yeah.
Keys are where I really shine.
Okay.
All right. This is that song I wrote in Nashville with Dean Sams and Lori Killian Starr. It goes like this.
I know I've always wanted to believe, and I pray the love will come and rescue me. Lonely was the only road I know, searching for the one to share my soul. Now here you are, right in front of me, when I'm holding you, I can hardly breathe, can you feel my heart, oh it's yours to keep, baby you're the one, you tore down every wall so I could see. Now I believe in love. Oh, I never really lived till there was you. You made me realize emotions I never knew. And in case I never find the words to say, I swear I'll show you each and every day. Cause here you are, right in front of me, when I'm holding you, I can hardly breathe, can you feel my heart? Oh, it's yours to keep, baby, you're the one. You tore down every wall so I could Now I believe in love. Here you are, right in front of me. When I'm holding you, I can hardly breathe. Can you feel my heart? Oh, it's yours to keep. Baby, you're the one. You tore down every wall so I could see. Yes, you tore down every wall surrounding me. Now I believe in love. I believe in love.
Ah, oh. Oh, thank you guys.
Goodness.
Woo! And it ended up on the album too. That was the first song we recorded out there in Nashville. Not neat.
Oh my goodness.
Fantastic.
I love that.
Nathan Osmond, it's been so great having you on. Thanks for paying it forward and coming onto our podcast.
I'm flattered that you asked me to come. This is so exciting.
So much. It was so fun. And I want to give a shout to your great podcast. You guys should all check it out if you haven't already.
Yes. Subscribe to both of these shows, right? And tell all your friends.
Thank you so much, Nathan.
Thanks for having me on.